You know who else is now doing it? It's the Peace Corps. They're no longer, it's not the Kennedy Peace Corps that go out there and build dams and irrigation and all that. No, I have a friend who was a driver for him from the U.S. Embassy that sent him out in the Republic of Georgia. Said all they do, they go out there and they run surveys because the CIA, and it's all for the CIA. The CIA is trying to figure out what the people are thinking and what key pressure points they can exploit. So yeah, U.S. So you get the guys that going from college. We're going to be the Peace Corps. No, all you're going to do is run surveys. So yeah, that's. I mean, it's a perversion of what that organization is supposed to be.
USAID, that's another one that I used to run into them in the strangest places. It'd be like out in rural Lebanon or something, and I see these two guys that clearly are Ivy League, sort of, with the preppy shirt and the loafers, and I'm like, what are you guys doing out here? I'm thinking to myself, like, why are you out here? And they say, oh, we're with USAID, and we're here to help small farmers with marketing their agricultural products. And I'm looking at these two guys, and I'm like, really? And I sat down and had tea with them, and oh, I went to Brown University, and so the total East Coast WASPs, like out in the middle of the Bekaa Valley, like, what the hell are you guys doing out here? So that is a CI the USAID was just a notorious front that gives you access into all sorts of places. And you know what? It is such a brilliant operation because they had money. So who they gave grants to meant everything. And if you look at the situation in Lebanon right now, Trump's special envoy, Tom Barrack, right? He's in there blatantly canvassing for a civil war, blatantly. He's
I know.
trying to compel the Lebanese government or the president and the prime minister, Joseph Aoun and Nawaf Salam, to shameless U.S. puppets, unfortunately, but they're trying to get them to use the Lebanese army to disarm Hezbollah. I mean, just a clear recipe for a civil war. And of
Of
course, that's
course.
what the U.S. and Israel want. But how are they able to divide Christians and Sunnis and Shiites in a country like Lebanon, which is a very small country? It's just geographically, it's not very big. It's the size of Wales, roughly. And but what it, but who they pay and who they don't pay. So all the contracts will go to Christian big families, very wealthy, influential families, create a lot of jobs. So where they spread the NGO money with USAID means everything, and that's how you create sectarian divisions. And where did the US government learn this tactic? This predates USAID. They perfected this with Native American tribes over the years. So this is how they managed to divide. Same exact thing. It was just wasn't formalized in the USAID system, but it was through the federal government. They had a State Department dealing with, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, basically dealing
Which is
with.
still there.
Yeah, so that's how you would divide up a tribe that was sovereign, but you needed to subdivide it. So how do you do that? You give money to some and not others. So pretty soon you have warring families, and you have people the angst and ambivalence between groups of people based on who has and who hasn't, who's favored and who's not. That's exactly what they've been doing in Lebanon for the last 30 years.
That sounds a lot if you read the history of the Creek Nation, the Creek Civil War that, by the way, the U.S. government sponsored, and then the Trail of Tears that followed after that, and the Creek were one of the quote civilized Indians because they lived in towns and they were actually getting ready to build a railroad and they had newspapers, so you can't exactly say they were out there running in teepees, but. Yeah, you're right. That's exactly how they ran it. They paid off different groups and they paid off some sub chiefs.
And with the casinos in America, this is related to Lebanon, by the way. So some tribes in America will have casinos and others won't. They don't all have casinos. So there's a more ethical, more moral, traditional Native American mindset and a culture that they don't want to be corrupted by alcohol and casinos, and they don't want to have a part in, like, profiting from it. So that causes a big split within the tribe. It's caused splits in whole reservations in America. Definitely Lakota Sioux is a good example of that. Mm-hmm. The difference between Rosebud, I think, and Pine Ridge. Huge difference there. So they do the same thing in the Middle East, especially in these diverse countries, with regards to the Western businesses, the non-Islamic elements that you inject in there, and it creates tension. And they really push it. Western, our governments behind the scenes really push those angles hard. They want that tension. They want to create that sectarian tension. And then, especially if it's a minority that they're backing, because then the minority relies on, and this was the British system. The minority right. relies on the empire to protect their right. status. So this is a game. It's an old game that's played, and the Americans have taken the British baton, if you will. Of these sort of colonial tactics.
Well, you know, the thing that gets me in Lebanon, though, this time around, I know how the Israelis played the different groups off. They particularly ally themselves on and off with the Christians. They try to avoid the Sunnis, and they aim for the Shia for the most part. But this time around, and I know what the government did in Lebanon, but they basically surrendered a third of the country. But the Israelis are targeting Christian zones just nonstop. I mean, they're going to, I think they're hitting them worse than the Shia. We see these accidental or one-offs every single day. Desecration of churches, turning them into toilets, destruction of crosses. I mean, never mind killing families, Christian families, every single day. How can the so-called leaders of the Christian third try to ally themselves when their own people are being butchered? Lebanese army officers are being killed with their families. I don't understand how they can. What kind of foundation they're standing on at this point?
Well, it's shocking. You know, it's just in Lebanon alone that level of treachery that you have the Maronite Christians in Junya, north of Beirut, there, and they're absolutely in league with Israel. I mean, they're for all intents and purposes Zionists, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just to be able to watch your fellow Lebanese getting literally carpet bombed, yeah, in the south and in villages that have been there for thousands of years. Okay, actual place where Christ, if you read the New Testament, those are the hills where he gave his sermons. Those were, yes. That's where the fish multiplied and the bread is there. It's Sidon, it's Tyre, it's all of those historic places. And Israel is just raising the whole thing to the ground in some cases. So, I mean, how can that even be acceptable? But so I don't have an answer to that question. I have tried to just have that discussion with some Lebanese. It's a very, very difficult discussion. However, I can tell you what the American interpretation is, because that one I know very well. And so how could a Christian Zionist accept that under the aegis of Judeo-Christian values, accept that the IDF in the space of 2 years have bombed the Shrine of St. Peter, the mausoleum of Simon Peter, which they planted explosive inside before they detonated it, the chapel of St. George, and the list goes on and on. Just in South Lebanon alone, the amount of whole Christian sites, that I'm not even talking about Gaza or the West Bank, okay, for that matter. So why would an American Christian conservative or Christian Zionist, whatever, how could they accept that? Do they not regard Christians in the Middle East as being like equal Christians? And there's the rub. They don't. Because that level of Christian evangelism in America views America as the new Jerusalem fundamentally. Mm-hmm. Some are explicit about this. Others maybe not so. If you add a little bit of racism in there, anti-Arab racism, you inject that in, then it's very easy to dehumanize people in Palestine because they're an Arab and they're living with Muslims, so they're almost being penalized for that. And so the reality, though, is in Bethlehem and Nazareth, there will be no Christians there in at the current rate in 5 or 10 years, 5 years in Nazareth, 10 years in Bethlehem. Imagine that, the birthplace of Jesus Christ. There's no Christians living in there. Why? And this has been the trend in with Israel for decades. And one of the reasons, yep, is it's in the Israeli interest to purge Christians from not just the Levant, but pretty much the Middle East. A lot left Iraq, and ISIS also drove a lot out as well, and Syria, the dirty war in Syria.
Yeah.
So it creates a polarized demographic in the Middle East where you just have Jews and Muslims. And that's the narrative that Israel wants to deliver to the West, is that it's us against them. The Christians are an inconvenience because they're a mitigating factor that stand between Zionists and Muslims. And so they would prefer not to have to deal with the Christians. Israelis and Zionists, because they're a problem. Just being there, they're a problem. They would rather have all-out scorched earth warfare between Jews and Muslims. That's better for them.
I think, honestly, I've been to Israel once back in 98. I've got some relatives in Israel from my father's side. I can't really talk to them because even by their standards, ethnically, I'm Russian from my mother's side and so on. And I'm Orthodox Christian, and to me, you know, the first priority as an Orthodox Christian after God comes your brothers and sisters in Christ, and then comes nationality. That comes third. So I honestly think that they hate the Christians a lot worse than they hate the Muslims. From historical aspects, I mean, if you look, the things they're doing, I mean, the desecrations, they don't do that to the mosque. They'll just blow them up. But the Christians, they're going out of their way to desecrate it as much as humanly possible.
They make it personal.
Yeah. It is. When they make the altar in the church into a toilet, you know, there's videos. I've seen the videos of that, reports coming in when they're destroying, and I'm not saying all Jews, the traditional Jews are mostly, you know, we don't want to deal with it, but the Zionists, it's like they're trying, I don't know, revenge?
There's something there. There's something deep there.
There's hatred. There's serious hatred there. And as far as, and you're right, by the way, as far as the Christian Zionists, like I said, to me, they're heretics. And I grew up among a lot of these guys. I have some friends of that. I try to explain to them that, you know, oh, we want to find the church, the ancient church. Yeah, that's called the Orthodox Church. I know the Catholics will say that's the Catholic Church, but yeah, I'm being Orthodox, so I'll say it's the Orthodox. But they don't consider the Orthodox or the Catholic as Christians.
Mm.
Flat out. Evangelicals, not all of them, of course, but the majority of evangelicals don't understand the Orthodox at all. There were some kind of Catholics of them. And the Catholics aren't Christians. I'm like, yeah, but yes, they are. And with the Zionist, quote, Christians, it's 10 times worse. So they don't care if they're getting killed. They're not real Christians to us. Yeah, they're whatever. There's some mixed up people over there. Kill them all. That's the attitude I've seen.
Yeah, we used to. I mean, I glossed over this when I lived in America. When I grew up in America, I lived there most of my adult, half my adult life, and I never really acknowledged some of these things and understood them until later. But there is the zealotry that we used to make fun of, obviously, in the 80s and 90s, but now I see there's very real. And the U.S. has a history of this, specifically Protestant evangelical zealotry. That's really a foundational building block of America and the settling the West, especially settling the Western states. And it's very important. And, you know, Mormons, you can kind of, they somewhat fit into that category, although that's a different type of, I wouldn't call them zealots in the same sense as it's a completely different branch of Christianity. But
well, they're not Christian. Mormons aren't Christian at all.
Yeah, it's a kind of derivative of Christianity.
Right.
Yeah. So, but this zealotry and this kind of, you know, the U.S. was much more theocratic, I think, even in terms of Congress and Senate. In the late 1700s and the 1800s, clearly. So we've become much more secularized throughout the 20th century, but it wasn't always like that. So there is now, you can see this kind of revanchism that Trump represents, and Bibi and this alliance between Bibi and Trump represents this great opportunity of revanchism for the Christian right. It's almost like they can recapture that place of prominence in the American identity that they once held. They no longer held because of progress and modernity and the 20th century. So it's, I think it's a complicated conversation, obviously, but I think some of these strands, I think we underestimate them because we just, because it's been pastiched in films and, you know, in culture and people. And now you can see that these things are not just like pastiche themes. These are real veins of American culture and society and politics.
Absolutely. And you know, when you, well, even historically speaking, you never had somebody like a Paula White around any U.S. president that said, you know, he is the anointed of God, and to raise your hand against this president is to raise your, the level is just, it's off the Richter scales. And I'll tell you another thing. For 3 years on Russian media, I was explaining what these Zionist Christians are. And the majority of people look at me like I'm insane. You know, because they can't accept that. It's a death cult that's afraid to die, by the way. They just want to teleport up. They take the easy route up. A few people go, oh. Like, yeah, you're getting. Now, in Russian media, they can't avoid it because you got Hegseth, you got Johnson, you got Paula White. And they're looking at it and going, holy crap. This is the people on the other side? It's like, yeah, I've been telling you this for 3 years.
It's like Jim and Tammy Baker.
You know, I remember them. I didn't live that far away from them.
that was extreme to me. Like, but now I'm looking at this, and Jim and Tammy were kind of mild, really, kind of lightweights, really. Jimmy Swaggart. John Hagee is hardcore, but you know, he kind of stays in his lane of eschatological madness. But the Paula White thing is just, that's another level. They're all sitting there putting their hands on Trump. He just tweeted it out today. He said national prayer, but it's national prayer of everyone worshiping Trump.
Yes.
The photo is there. It's on his Twitter account today, on the White House's Twitter. And I'm like, how did we get here as a country? Like, when did this happen? And why is this being allowed to happen? I mean, I just think this would have been rejected out of hand. To me, that's also a bizarre phenomenon, is how this, some of these things, like that, plus renaming the Department of Defense, the Department of War, has more or less gone on without a fight. To me, that those are major political battlegrounds, you know, in my view, that you should defend. If you're a Democrat, especially, like, because otherwise you haven't got a future, quite frankly, if you don't. But I don't know. Maybe it's just modern America and everybody's just so ambivalent about everything. And I'm not sure. But it's, to me, I'm shocked, basically.
Oh, yeah. This in the level of corruption, I mean, just the level of corruption, I'll tell you, you thought Biden was bad. But, I mean, compared to the Trump 2.0, Biden was almost a choir boy.
Yeah.
The Trump coins. I was on a show, an English show, a couple hours ago, and we were talking about that. You know, Trump and Melania coins, they made like $30 billion off it. You know what they're worth right now? They've lost 93% of their value over last year. I mean, it used to be called a pump and dump.
Yeah.
And you'd have federal prosecutors by now putting somebody up on charges for just a pump and dump. But that's what it is. And
it was worse. It's worse than a pump. They did a pump and dump. But what they did, what we found out a couple weeks ago, is they used, what you do is you just magic up a memcoin, right? You just magic it up. It exists as computer code on a blockchain. And you magic up the Trump coin, the Melania coin. They used their coin, whatever that was, for World Liberty Financial. I think that was the company that the Trump and Wyckoff and Sons run. And they use the coin as collateral to get real money. Okay.
Oh, that's really?
That's what FTX and that's what put Sam Bankman-Fried in the federal cooler on doing. Guess what? Why aren't they being pulled up for the same thing that FTX went down for? Because they basically swapped out the regulators. Once Trump came in, he sorted out the SEC and the regulators and then pardoned some other guy who I think got done for something similar. And so they're walking basically scot-free right now. I mean, I thought Biden was corrupt as well. I thought that was the apex of direct corruption. But wow. No, this is next level. and it's next level. And they're doing it on American soil. The Bidens laundered all their dirt and dirty money through Ukraine.
Right.
So you almost have to give them credit for like going through the effort of having to go hang out in Ukraine and deal with all that. It's like all these gangsters and the you know, the Burisma crowd, you know, just corrupt prosecutors and whatnot. I mean, at least that takes some work. Hunter Biden, I'm almost respecting him right now compared to the Trump sons, you know, like who just sit on their ass and spin up a meme coin and then bang, cha-ching, $6 billion in the bank. I'm like, Hunter is brilliant. I got a newfound respect for Hunter Biden after this, honestly.
Oh, well, come on. You've got the Trump dynamic duo that go to every single negotiations. They're not there to negotiate. They're there to sign land deals. The new Gaza City minus the Gazans. The land swaps in Ukraine, because that's why it fails, because these people are shallow. They're as shallow as it gets. They don't understand anything past the transactional.
They're selling access. Wyckoff and Kushner selling access. Don Jr. and Eric are doing the same. They went over to Abu Dhabi, managed to claw $500 million bucks off the sheikhs in Abu Dhabi. And I think these guys must be thick, based on what's happening now. I mean, look how the economy has transformed in the last 2 months. So what they must be thinking? They got absolutely scammed. What were the Gulf Arabs doing there? They put money in the pot to get access,
of course,
and to get preferential treatment. But nothing's going to be able to save them with what's coming and what's already here, really, if you think about it. But and I think the Saudi Arabians are much more circumspect. Now they did this fund with Jared Kushner that's mainly, I think, about real estate and development. And that sort of coincided with the Saudi liberalization agenda. Mm-hmm. So they brought the PGA golfers in, they brought all the top footballers in, and all the artists, you know, there are these Western performers coming and doing concerts there. And so that's all, but that all makes sense. But where now it's looking like they're going to have to be a lot more cautious doing business with, especially with the Trumps, because there's going to be an unholy backlash against all of this throughout the Middle East. And it's only just begun. This is the beginning. And all those Gulf monarchies are going to have to hold on for dear life to sort of maintain the legitimacy of their position going forward. Because the power has changed in the region, because Iran, it's not a Gulf monarchy,
right,
is now in the sort of ascendancy in terms of power and the ability to, you know, defend its sovereignty and set new rules in the region. So it's going to be very interesting. So we'll see how all these business relationships pan out between the Trumps and the Arabs. Remember all the $2 trillion investment after Donald Trump did his tour? I'm bringing home the money. I've spoke to the Arabs. They love me. They're going to put $2 trillion in the U.S. economy. They're not putting anything in the U.S. economy.
Patrick, I've got a hard stop, unfortunately, because I got another show I've got to go to. I want to thank you, and I want to continue this, because there's the Trump slush fund for Venezuela. There's the question of where, you know, they pirated a couple ships worth of oil coming out of the Gulf, where those have disappeared to. The Peace Board billions, if you're up for it next week, if you don't mind, we can continue the discussion.
We can definitely pick these threads up. There's plenty of threads to pull on.
It's amazing. It is. I'm mind blown at how far this goes, and it's all under the radar. I mean, there's a splash on there from the media, and then they shut the hell up, and it just keeps going.
Yeah, would love to. Yeah, that'll be good.
Thank you. Everybody, thank you very much for joining us, and we will be back in the next week to discuss the rest of the Trump empire of, I don't know, black, gray, 50 shades of gray. Thank you, everyone. Cheers.